So I'm going to do a little bit of reading today, and I hope you'll just focus on the pictures that we have, the beautiful pictures. I met her, and when I met her, I was a stumbling, fumbling teenager. She was a beautiful blonde bombshell. She caught all of our eyes as she walked past us as we sat at our tables at Camp Asable. I remember attempting to muster the courage to talk to her, making futile attempts, and all that came out was this gurgling, weird sound. I'm lucky she kept talking to me. She was carefree, fun. She had so much love for adventure. As I got to know her, began to date her, I remember walking with her, holding her hand proudly. She is mine. There really wasn't much she couldn't do. She not only was intelligent, she was valedictorian. She was also creative, beautiful. She could create such beauty on pages. She created floats. She did everything. We dated through high school and then into college. In college, she was determined, strong. She was independent. And that independence made me realize she could live without me. We would argue sometimes. Mostly my jealousy and fear would be the issue. But she would stay the course. She was strong. But as we got older and we continued through college, she became less and less carefree growing up. Because we were both growing up. We were both still deeply in love. But everything was bigger, fuller. She was my everything. I remember on our wedding day, I remember watching her that day because there's just something about seeing your partner there, all dressed up. I saw her dressed in white. She walked from table to table, greeting people, smiling, letting people know she loved them. I remember falling more and more in love with her as I saw her do it. She and I had planned this wedding to a T, and when I say she and I mean her. She's detailed, and I am so happy to just follow along, smile stupidly, and shake hands, and play repeat. She walks down the aisle. Seeing her there, it's like I see her for the first time again. My mouth is dry. My thoughts are jumbled. She looks so beautiful. I'm supposed to sing a song, and I can hardly remember the words. And then I begin remembering the words right before I sing, and I think they just aren't enough. They're just not enough. They fail to what I'd really want to say to her, what's deep down inside. And as I look at her, beautiful, stunning, I want to be enough. We married. People say that first year of marriage is tough, and it is. But it's also beautiful. It's filled with mystery and wonder and change. Those first few years, it wasn't hard to love her. She was a rock. She was my partner. I struggled, though, getting a teaching job at first. Not much openings there in Bering Springs, Michigan. I scraped by doing whatever I could. Construction, Home Depot, working late hours, helping adults get their education. In the middle of a very dangerous city. I knew she deserved the world. She could do whatever she wanted to do. She could be whatever she wanted to be. And I was beginning to feel like I couldn't give her everything that she wanted. Those years of struggle, though, she still was beautiful inside and out. Strong-willed, determined. I faltered. I struggled, feeling undeserving. Those years of change, finally getting a job. I remember moving together to Colorado. There I watched her blossom. I saw other friends and family begin to embrace her and see what I saw. How she could go into a room and just light it up with that smile. She is an absolute gift. I get to see that gift manifested in new ways as of late. Phenomenal ways. I saw her pregnant, and she truly did glow. I watched as her belly grew, and we created more and more room in our home for this baby girl. We're both wildly terrified, but she wears pregnancy just like everything else with grace and beauty. We argue over names. We finally choose one, Ashlyn, natural beauty. And I think as I watch Danielle through the pregnancy, I can't help but think that is a great name for both her and my daughter. We had a second one, Kaysen, and I watch now as she takes on a new role. She is a mother, and she's a terrific one. But she doesn't always see that. The rest of the world does. I sometimes watch feeling sad as my wife pours over book after book after book, not feeling like she is enough, feeling like a failure as a mother. And the truth is, she's not. The rest of us look at her and we're inspired. She's an incredible parent. Even in the moments of brokenness, when things are said and slip-ups happen, she recovers with grace. This parenting thing, though, it has changed us. U.S., us, the Tony and the Danielle. It strains some things. Conversations aren't the same anymore at the dinner table. When you're trying to speak and you've got your children quick to tell you about their day, to interrupt your conversation. By the end of the night, you're both too sleepy to be able to have one anymore. We sometimes argue, we sometimes disagree. She has become something new in this process. Danielle is not the same girl I dated back in high school. She isn't the carefree, creative hippie, blonde bombshell that held my hand and wanted to kiss me every second. She isn't as spontaneous these days. And sometimes that's hard. Danielle has changed in our journey. But I have to be honest with you, I would have it no other way. I'm blessed to be married to an incredible physical therapist that heals people, that recognizes a need and brings restoration everywhere she goes. I'm married to a strong, powerful, godly woman who pours her life and energy into family. I'm married to a beautiful, sexy, charming woman who takes my breath away in new ways every day. Ways that are still, years later, hard to put into a lyric. She's changed, for sure. Our journey has changed. And I'm so blessed to be a part of it. Right now, I want to welcome my wife, someone who is frustrating, super organized, incredible, loving, honest, my life partner. I'd like to welcome to the stage my wife, Danielle.
Not really that organized. I fooled him. So I'm going to stick with my notes too, because some of this gets a little bit hard for me, and so I want to stay on track. So when I met Tony, he was 17. We were at summer camp. It was his first summer working at camp, and I was a family camper. And the first time I saw him, he walked past me with his bleached blonde hair, and I was curious. My first impression of him was that he was a nice, genuine guy. I grew up going to public school, and I felt like a lot of the boys at my school were macho, rough around the edges, insecure, kind of egotistical. I had never met such a nice, genuine, real person before, I felt like, in terms of guys. As the week went on, I watched him at camp as he took lead roles in some of the evening skits. And that Sabbath, he led music, and special music, so I got to hear his voice. And I was so impressed and intrigued by this young boy. We decided to stay in touch a little bit as we both went back to school. I lived in Florida. He was in Michigan. So we tried long-distance dating in high school. Back then, the only option was email. We didn't have cell phones. And so he was at boarding school. So eventually, we decided to try using the telephone. So we'd talk every night. He was an RA, so we had access to the pay phones down the hall. And so he'd put an out-of-order sign on the phone every night, so we knew that one would be available. So he'd tell me which phone to call that night. So we went through calling cards like you wouldn't believe. But it was good for us because we were able to learn to communicate far away, and that ended up helping us down the road when we had times in our marriage we had to live apart. So anyway, what really attracted me to Tony early on was how much of a great leader he was and committed to spirituality he was, even in high school. He was an RA. He was on the gymnastics acrobatics team. He led music with one of the campus bands. He was a student spiritual leader. So all of those things were just really impressive to me at what a strong Christian boy he was, even as a teenager. And I could tell the other people were so drawn to him. His personality was just magnetic, and he was so enthusiastic about everything he did. So we both ended up at Andrews together. We spent summers working at summer camps together, and that was really inspiring for me too, as I got to watch him interact with kids and teach them at camp. I watched him be gentle with the little ones who had obvious challenges at home. Home lives were kind of rough. And then I watched him be fun with the young teenagers who just needed a friend. And I watched as he was intentionally strong, moraled, and helped teenagers who may have been broken and needed a strong male role model in their lives where they weren't getting one at home. So it was so rewarding and fun to witness growth and maturity develop as we spent our collegiate years together. His junior year, he was voted the spiritual director for the campus at Andrews. And so one of his amazing talents that I still am impressed by now is his ability to see a need within community, figure out a way to help fulfill the need, and really bring it to fruition. And so that year, we noticed that we were required to get worship credit, and the only option for Friday nights was kind of a boring Vespers service. But he recognized that as a need, that students wanted something more than that. And so we decided to try this little thing we called the Second Story Cafe. In the upper level of the cafeteria, we sectioned off a small room smaller than this. And we expected maybe 100 students would come, but practically the whole campus did. And so we realized that this was something that the students wanted and needed. So over the next few months and year, we expanded to different buildings on campus. We needed entire buildings with multiple rooms that would allow for students to share their stories, their artwork, just community together. And what we started then has morphed a little bit, but they still do it now. So it's lasted over 15 years since we were there, which is really a testament to just what vision he saw back then. So anyway, fast forward a little bit. We decided to get engaged my senior year. And so we were married. What an exciting and nerve-wracking day that was. I looked forward to it for so long. I think we dated for 5 years by then. And I didn't realize that Tony was planning this song to sing. I had asked a friend to sing for our wedding. And so as I was turned around, you know, waiting to watch our friend perform it, I heard Tony's voice through the mic, which was such a special surprise to me, because I loved it when he sang to me. I just didn't expect it. So that was just such a, again, a testament of his character of surprising me, knowing what I liked. And he did that for me on our special day. So I think that picture is of him singing to me. And we got some advice that day that I don't think really settled in until months or even years later. I think my sister shared with us in her little speech that we are not marrying the person who we are today, as we often think of when, you know, you get married to this person that's in front of me, but we're marrying the journey that we're about to embark on. And we had no idea what wise truth that was back then, but it has really stuck with us and helped our commitment to this journey since. So over the next few years, we were presented with challenges I think any newlywed couple is faced at times. Most of our friends moved away. Who do we spend time with? How do you live on no money? I was in grad school, and like Tony shared, he was bouncing around from one job to another. He had to finish his student teaching our first few months, but then he finished in December, and there's no teaching jobs available halfway through the year. So he worked at Home Depot, he worked in construction and taught evening classes in Benton Harbor, which is, I don't know, 20 minutes from Andrews, and back then was not safe. There was a lot of violent crime, so a lot of the people he was working with in those evening classes were criminals or trying to stay out of prison or had just gotten out of prison. So it was scary. It was scary for me. And he started to feel stressed. He was not happy with his situation. I could tell that he felt guilty that he couldn't do more for us. And I had very little to give. I was exhausted and tired from studying all the time in my first year of grad school. So we started drifting apart a little bit. By the end of that year, we'd been married a year, he was offered a position to go to a camp in Colorado and be the assistant director. He was so unhappy with where we were. I thought maybe it'd be good for him, even though it would mean we'd have to live apart. So we did. It was only going to be 2 months. I knew we'd survive. I was going to be busy with school. So we did it. But by the end of summer, he was offered a job for the next school year to stay in Colorado. I couldn't transfer. You can't transfer grad school. I was in physical therapy. So we decided to make it work. We were committed to the journey, whatever that would mean. But it was harder than we expected it to be at times. His first year of teaching was difficult. He had 5 or 6 classes to prepare for, that's a lot for a teacher, all in different subjects. I was so enmeshed in my school, I, again, didn't have a whole lot emotionally to give either. And so it was hard. We did what we could. We saw each other on long weekends, which maybe was once a month. But we made it through, and after that year, we were finally able to live together after being married for 2 or 3 years by that point. And we enjoyed our time in Colorado. We hiked, we biked, we explored. It was good. It was fun. I enjoyed watching him blossom into an amazing teacher. He's so creative. He's again, has such a heart for the kids, and it was fun to watch as he was so active and fun for the kids, and they loved him. Students loved him. Parents loved him. He really challenged kids to think. I think he does that with us here, challenges us to think critically, question things, but that didn't always sit well with some people. And so over time, he started getting a little pushback, started to feel like his principal wasn't supporting him, started to feel like a few parents weren't supporting him. And so it became more and more of a stressful situation. He started to feel a little bit attacked by some people. And that's around the time that we had our first baby. So as he was getting more stressed, we had another stressor added to our marriage in having a baby who didn't sleep well. I was up every couple hours for months. And so both of us were sleep deprived. He started getting sick all the time. I was frustrated with that, and he couldn't help me. So we started to drift apart a little bit. I feel like we started to separate from each other and from our relationships with God. And yet he still continued to take on more things. He became the praise leader at our church, which was like a job every Sabbath. And he started tutoring and teaching guitar lessons after school. So he had long days during the week, busy on Sabbath. We drove separately all the time, and church wasn't close. It was at least a half hour commute. So again, just more and more drifting apart. And finally it got to the place where the school board, there were just a couple of people who kind of wanted him out and made it very obvious that that was the case. They started holding secret personnel meetings. It was really hard on both of us. He felt like he had no support, and it was hard for me to watch him deteriorate in that way. I didn't expect him to fight back so much, and it felt like he was ready to fight and die on every hill, every opportunity, which was hard for me to watch, and it was exhausting. I couldn't keep up with it. But he was asked to speak that summer at a summer camp in Washington, and I encouraged and enjoyed those opportunities because I could see that his passions could be revived again a little bit. And after that week, he was offered a job. If we moved to Washington, he could be a youth pastor there. We realized that we couldn't stay in Colorado, even though that was the community that we had built and we loved and we thought we'd always be part of. We had to leave it. And it was hard feeling like you were forced out. But anyway, we moved. And we had a second baby right after we moved. So that added a lot to our stress and to my plate. And I think I was depressed. We started facing, I felt like Tony was angry a lot and our communication suffered. So I watched as this fun, loving, carefree, spiritual leader turned into a cynical, selfish, angry, sick, short-tempered man, and yet he's supposed to be a pastor. So our exciting journey turned into an isolating, walking on eggshells, frustrating experience. But it was also a place of healing. Some of the people that he worked with understood where we were coming from and knew what we had been through and helped provide some balance and some shelter and some safety. And so it took a year at least for him to relax a little bit and to recover from some of the paranoia that had set in during those years of teaching, or to even be able to trust anyone again. He was still bitter and angry and resentful, so it was still hard for us to talk. The grass was always greener somewhere else, and so I couldn't keep up. I felt like I couldn't keep up, and so I kind of stopped trying to. I struggled with my own depression, with the kids and loneliness and feeling like I couldn't handle toddler, who I think was also projecting back some of this stuff that she was seeing from us. So that was really challenging too, not knowing how to manage both husband and a child who was really wrestling. And we moved here during that time, and so I was really nervous about coming here because I didn't know what other changes our child was going to face that I was going to have to deal with, and how he was going to handle it. So I was a little fearful before we moved here. But he finally, with a good, strong community here and some counseling that he decided to get, which really started to help him sort through some of the triggers that we realized were setting him off, or that started in Colorado or maybe even earlier than that. And as he came out from under the weight of some of those, I could physically feel some of those burdens, emotional burdens, lift. And we started to be able to share thoughts again and to talk again, to dream again without fear of what I was going to face. And I watched him start to blossom again and some of those passions come back again, start to find some of his confidence again. And that's been really fun to watch unfold. He's become an amazing father and husband. Sometimes I'm even jealous now how good he is with them and how patient he is with them, things that I never would have expected a few years ago. He's so much freer and calmer and more grounded mentally and emotionally. So we're continuing to learn how to support each other's growth. This is still a process for us, and it's still kind of new in some ways. We're learning to appreciate each other's separate gifts and talents, learning to give each other the space to follow our individual passions. And we realize it's a journey, and it will continue to be a journey. There's going to be ebbs and flows, and we like it that way. We realize that there's advantages that way, too. We're more patient with each other. I'm blessed to be married to an incredibly visionary and passionate person This seems to understand the deeper needs of people's woundedness and who isn't afraid to help them walk through the mess that dredging some of that up creates. So I'm married to a strong, powerful, godly man who pours his life and energy into his family and his work. I'm married to a handsome, witty, deeply intelligent man who continues to keep me on my toes with his unpredictability in good ways now. He's changed, he's grown, the journey has grown, and it's expanded, yet it's still complicated sometimes, and I'm blessed to be part of it. Being in a relationship means we're committed not just to the person, but to the journey.
Danielle and I, as we were talking about what it means to be in relationship, we decided we want to just share openly and honestly. I think a lot of times we hear stories from certain people, and man, it just seems so unattainable. And we know certain couples that they just look like they have it all together. And so today we wanted to share with you some honest, open stories about how we came to be where we are on our journey. And we understand, again, all of us are stumbling and fumbling through it, aren't we? Can I just, the couples in this room, would you just raise your hand in agreement with me that it is a journey of stumbling and fumbling? Anyone that is not married or dating right now, look at those hands, put them back up. We're all trying to figure it out. None of us have it perfectly. And so we're growing and we're changing and we're doing the best that we can. And so Danielle and I, we understand biblically, there are so many beautiful examples of how to be in relationship with each other, friendships, how to be in relationship with family members. Sometimes that's the most difficult. How to be in relationship with the person you love in that romantic relationship. It's all over throughout Scripture. And so we wanted to share just a couple things we've picked up along the way, along the journey.
So knowing their wounds or learning their wounds, sometimes that takes a long time to attain. Exodus 23:9 says, "You shall not oppress a stranger, since you yourselves know the feelings of a stranger. For you also were strangers in the land of Egypt." So we've all experienced brokenness to varying degrees as children, as adults. And it's been said that we're all products of our childhood or we're products of our experiences. And so I find in my work, I work with chronic pain, those wounds of the past bubble to the surface at times you may not expect. And in the case of what I see on a daily basis is it leads oftentimes to chronic pain. Prior to that, oftentimes what we're talking about today is that on like the small daily triggers or even the big life event triggers dredge up old wounds that maybe we tried for years to suppress and keep down and not face. But the reality is if we don't deal with them, we don't face them, we don't allow healing, they come up. And sometimes they come up in pretty ugly, unpredictable, and irrational ways.
Danielle actually has this terribly annoying habit. And I say that jokingly. But I will come home sometimes and I'll just kind of spew venom about this thing that happened. You know, Silvino said something. I'm just kidding. But there's something that happened. I'll just spew it out, right? And she'll look at me and I know what's coming because her head is nodding. And she'll ask the annoying question, "What do you think's behind that?" And then I have to deal with it. Because usually there is something that's behind it. And she knows my story. She knows my wounds. And she's able to identify it pretty quickly and say, "Oh, there's something else going on here, Tony. What is it?"
But it took me doing work on my own wounds through a small group that I've been part of for a couple of years now. And helping me be able to identify what's not me. Like I can tell he's not mad at me, it's something else that's going on. But it took me finding healing to be able to differentiate what he's struggling with is not part of me, and how can I help him and support him through that. But it took finding healing on both of our parts.
Another thing that we're learning is how to communicate and how not to communicate. Communication is so important with your partner or your friends, or your family. And so we've learned some things. James 1:19 says, be quick to hear. Be quick to hear. Be slow to anger. Take time to listen to the other person. But here's the thing. We don't always communicate things very well, do we? For instance, my wife, she's so embarrassed I'm going to say this, but she's a superhero to me. She will run these like half marathons in like a gazelle-like pose. And me, when I'm running them, I look like a three-legged dying deer. She's a superhero. She does so many things. But there's one thing that Danielle cannot do. It's not possible for her. And it's, she's not able to read my mind yet. And I'm hoping at some point in time that'll happen. But right now, she isn't. And so we're learning as a couple who are partnered together in this journey, we're learning that there are certain expectations we both have. And if you don't share those expectations together, they're never going to meet them. And so that's why it's so important as a couple to begin sharing the expectations we have for one another. There's also this. The person closest to you is the person that can trigger you the easiest. Y'all hear me on that? There's something that I do to Danielle. She doesn't like to get tickled, first of all. That makes her angry. But there's something else. If I leave my drawer open a little bit, it's so frustrating. Or I might come home from work and she's vacuumed the floor and everything, and I will sit down with a pile of Doritos and a good chunk of cheese on the top of it, and I'll start eating, and I will notice the frustration. It looks like I just committed murder. There's certain triggers that I'm learning and certain frustrations I'm learning, but it takes a long time, and so that's why it's so important to communicate that. Tony, I just vacuumed this thing, and you're spilling that all over the couch. Learning to share the needs that we all have. You will never have your needs met individually if you don't share them with your partner. And this is something we're learning together as a couple.
So acceptance gives space for personal growth at each person's own rate. I think we should always be striving to improve who we are, but allow that we do that differently, and how we go about it and how we obtain it is maybe a different route from each other. So even though we are married, we're still two people with our own separate passions, desires, talents, gifts, and allowing each other to explore those and build and grow those is important in maintaining, helping us each grow individually. For me to expect him to do things and conform to me is not fair to him. So understanding that we are both at our own places and I accept him for who he is and I'm not trying to change and control that, I've learned is very important. But
I will always misplace my wallet 2 seconds after I pick it up.
And I have to accept that that's who he is, as much as I try to encourage that we just have one spot.
We've tried the bowl thing. You put the bowl there. You put the keys in. It doesn't work. We lose the bowl.
And I have to accept that that's how he chooses to live. And I don't need to change it. It's
maybe
not my
job. Need more bowls.
It.
We need like 3 or 4 bowls. Yeah. It's good. We're also learning to fight fair. And here's the thing I'm learning about couples is that Just like 1 Peter 2, 1-3, it says we need to learn to remove the negativity. Conflict is not a bad thing. It really isn't. If you are in a relationship with someone and you never experience conflict, what that tells us is you've probably never talked about anything of significance. You probably aren't really communicating. Because when you're communicating, when you're talking, you're actually opening up some change, and change is threatening. Now, you can go to the other side and be a couple that's always in conflict, and that's not good either. But change, growth, movement, it happens because conflict takes place in a relationship. You're two separate people coming together. And so we learn and we grow together. And as we move through conflict, we learn to lean on grace, lean on love. The issue that's going on is not, she is not the issue. The issue is the issue. And as a couple, we problem solve and we work together toward restoration. And really what we're talking about is the idea of Trinity. The idea of Trinity is one of the most beautiful biblical concepts I can think of. Trinity says this, Father in the center, Jesus, Holy Spirit, and it goes outward. Because this is what happens when you experience relationship. There's life-sustaining power there when the two come together. And then when that happens, you begin to outwardly express that. Jesus outwardly expressed the Father. And after you do this, then everything you do breathes life into community and you bring others in. And this is what we're learning, is that that conflict actually has the opportunity to bring more and more growth when we learn and we lean on grace and love. Lastly, we wanted to leave you with this. 13 years ago. Yes, it's 13 years. 13 years ago, we were married on a boat. And my sister-in-law said those words that, 10 years later, it didn't even connect until now. I look at it and I think, that those were such beautiful words. To me, at first, they were just Hallmark words, but now I get it. You are not marrying the person. You are committing yourself to the journey. And so our prayer for you and us and everyone in this community is that we can learn to commit to each other as a family, as couples. We can learn to commit to one another, commit to the journey. And when we disagree with something, and we will as we grow deeper and we tell our stories, we will disagree. There will be conflict. But may we navigate through that with love and grace. And may we learn to continue to commit to the journey that God has put us on. Blessings today on the Sabbath day. Make sure you give your spouse lots of love and your friends and family around you. Blessings.
To share our stories, to be in community with each other. Please bless the individuals here today. May they go out, share loving relationships with their spouses, their kids, their family, and be better representations of you in their daily lives.
And God, we thank you and praise you that you continue to open our eyes to bigger and bigger pictures of who you are. And Lord, as we understand you and your loving character, may we continue to share that with everyone we know. And let that start at home first, with our kids, our family, our work. Let that continue to spread out into the world. We thank you, Lord. In your name we pray. Amen.